Fred Film Radio, Venice Film Festival, Italy.
Fred Film Radio, this is Nicola Comati here at the 74th edition of the Venice Film Festival, and today I'm joined by Nick Hooker, director of Agnelli. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So, Nick, Agnelli is it's a household name in Italy, even after almost 15 years of his death.
Yeah.
Still, you know, holding and beholding. I just wonder, how did you actually come up with the idea of creating this?
Well, I mean, one of the producers of the film, the main producer of the film, is Graydon Carter, who's the editor of Vanity Fair in America, in New York. And I'd done a film with him previously, and we were looking around at what to do next, and he'd always been fascinated by Agnelli, and Agnelli in America is really how he's known in America as this unbelievably glamorous, stylish, elegant, you know, playboy, some sort of avatar of everything Americans sort of fantasize about what Italy is. You know, so I knew a little bit more about him than that. I mean, I knew that, you know, he owned Fiat, and I knew that he was a huge industrialist in Italy, and that he'd had, and that the 70s were sort of tumultuous in Italy, and that he was in the middle of all that. And what drew us to it was really this. I just knew it would be a great story. I think you can count on one hand the kind of the men or women who've had lives like that, who have of that intensity, of that extremity, of that breadth. You know, I mean, his life was like unbelievable. So I knew that there would be. I knew that there was a great story there, and I knew that the likelihood was that there would be really wonderful, fascinating, interesting people to meet to discuss it. And also I knew that it would mean coming to Italy a lot. You can't say no to that.
And tell me, I mean, aside from the jet set and the glamorous figure of Agnelli, like, tackling his persona is pretty much personifying Italy from the post-war onwards. So what did you cherish after all this incredible research
about
especially
him?
Not just about him, but about also like the ridiculously insane story that, like, you know, happened in Italy after the end of the World War.
I think it struck me that Italy was this kind of, relatively speaking, a sort of new country, you know, unified for not very long. And that, you know, the ancient power, so the old power structures in Italy were very, rather power in Italy was very, very volatile, very weak in Rome. And that the way he kind of stepped into his role and the way he kind of understood that he had this responsibility and the way he sort of knew also that during the period that where he was really in during the 70s, certainly, he knew that he had a responsibility to explain Italy to the Americans. You know, that was a big... I was talking to someone the other day, 2 days ago in New York, who had been in the CIA in Rome in the 70s. And he said, you know, one of the things that Gianni did that I don't think Italians really even understand is he was very, very helpful and very, very important in convincing the Americans to not do something stupid in Italy. Do you know what I mean?
Of course.
And, like, for example, there was a memo, unclassified memo from Kissinger to Nixon, saying, justifying the coup in Chile to topple Allende and install Pinochet. And one of the justifications for that sort of covert CIA American, you know, move was that if a leftist communist government succeeds in then that's all the inspiration, all the motivation the Italians will need to really. And so there was definitely an element in the American government that wanted to, that were inclined to do something radical in Italy. And Gianni was the one who was constantly telling them, no, 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 don't do that. It'll blow up in your face. It'll backfire. There's a the Communist Party in Italy is not what you think it is. It'll fragment, it'll evolve, it'll change, it'll split, and we just have to be patient and contain it and make sure that that in the process that the economy doesn't get annihilated in the process. So he was on a knife edge that whole decade, you know, not just in Italy, but, you know, so I just found that fascinating. But at the same time, while he was on a knife edge, he was still looked $1 million. He still was chasing beautiful women all over the world. He was still sailing his at the Agnetta. He was still I love that in the film, there's a guy in the film, Freck Vreeland, who was in the CIA, mm-hmm. who talks about, you know, Johnny picking him up in a Fiat, but he'd had a Ferrari engine put in the Fiat. You know, I just thought that was like the coolest thing ever. Like, and so I think that's what Johnny, the thing I got about with Johnny was that the whole thing was a game, mm-hmm. was an adventure. Mm-hmm. And that also he had this kind of, he was one of those guys who had been a young man in the war. You know, he had, one of the people who was closest to Johnny, who worked for him for 30 years, inseparable, like he was right-hand man. And told me that he was walking down a pier in Corsica once with Johnny, and Johnny kept looking over at him like this every 5 seconds to make sure he was still there. And the guy was like, why are you doing that? And Johnny said, well, the thing is, he told the story that he'd been in a truck in Tunisia during the war, in a convoy, and these Spitfires, the British had come in and attacked the convoy. And the guy next to Johnny, Johnny looked over, he was there, he looked over, and suddenly his head had been blown off. He was dead. Mm-hmm. So Johnny had this kind of like, there was a kind of post-traumatic stress situation, I think, that Johnny had somewhat. And I also think that for Johnny, the war was like a huge, you know, adventure in Technicolor, you know. And I think a lot of his post-war, the reason he was so crazy driving, adventure, you know, the cocaine, all that stuff, the reason he was so, that was so... there for him is because he was this. He wanted to kind of keep the level of adventure and adrenaline up. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Which I always sort of found fascinating. And I like, for example, he kind of liked the idea. He loved the for him a day walk a day when he was when you know a day when someone makes an assassination attempt on you and fails is a great day. Mm-hmm. That's a day worth living. A day when no one tries to kill you is kind of a bore. Like, it's kind of boring. You know, that was his attitude, you know.
And one of the most exciting things as well from your film is that I really couldn't imagine is this sort of, while I was watching it, I just felt that Gianinelli for many is the quintessence of Italianity.
Yeah.
Let's like make this neologism. But at the same time, he wasn't, you know. Maybe from an Italian perspective, he really wasn't. He was like always stuck in the middle, but never really fitting into a mold.
Right.
And I just feel like the way that you also approached it, maybe from an external perspective, so not bound by, you know, Italian heritage, right. or like the classic look of right. Gianinelli.
Right.
That also was a very refreshing experience.
Well, I think Gianni, from what I understand, you know, Gianni was Piemontese first. He was from Turin. That was really, and his cultural reference was Paris, not Rome. You know, Rome for him was like a cesspool of like corruption and incompetence, and you know, and not incompetence, but just like ineffectiveness and decadence. You know, and whereas Paris was like refinement, cult. Apparently, his accent, you know, the rolling R's. Mm-hmm. The all that stuff all came sort of French, you know, and he spoke French with an English accent because his governess, Mrs. Parker, was English, you know, and he spoke his English was perfect. I mean, beautiful. He spoke English like an English aristocrat. So I can imagine for most Italians he was like a freak. He was sort of like not relatable particularly. Mm-hmm. But my sense is that he was sort of, you know, his charisma and his star, because he was like a movie star. You know, he had that kind of thing that old movie stars have, where you see them in the flesh and they're like, that's a great looking guy, but then you put a camera and you look through the lens and something happens. It's like, oh my god, like, there's something's happening there, there's like an X factor. And that's a very, very powerful thing. It's sort of like a drug, you know. You can seduce an entire, you know, that quality, that kind of charisma has a sort of seductive power that enables you to sort of levitate in a way that and get away with stuff that most people can't. Most people would they'd be destroyed by. Do you know what I mean?
I do, and I really thank you very much for being here as well. Yeah. That was a lovely conversation.
Good, good.
Always here, Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.